This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing is Catch a Fire by Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Oh, wow.
All right. So this is here's a description of the album. It says, Catch a Fire is the fifth studio album by Bob Marley and the Wailers, released on April 13th, 1973. It is widely regarded as one of the greatest reggae albums of all time and a key record in bringing Jamaican music to an international audience. The album was the band's first release under Island Records, with producer Chris Blackwell polishing their raw roots reggae sound to appeal to rock audiences. The result was a fusion of reggae with rock and soul influences, featuring electric guitar solos, keyboard overdubs, and a more polished production style. Thematically, Catch a Fire blends political consciousness, social struggle, and spirituality, with standout tracks like Concrete Jungle, Slave Driver, and 400 Years, addressing issues of oppression and resistance. The album also contains more personal and romantic songs such as Stir It Up, which became one of Marley's signature hits. Though it wasn't an immediate commercial success, Catch a Fire has since become a landmark album, helping to launch Bob Marley into global superstardom and solidifying reggae's place on the world stage.
Sounds like it should be fun.
All right, so the album was released on the 13th of April, 1973, and the genres are reggae, reggae rock, and roots reggae. Label is Tuff Gong and Island Records, and produced by Bob Marley and Chris Blackwell. And if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, the album is, there's 9 songs on the album, and the first side goes through songs 1 through 5. So it starts with Concrete Jungle and ends with Baby, We've Got a Date. So if you're listening along, if you want to stop it after the 5th song, Baby, We've Got a Date, we'll pause and discuss the album halfway through. Okay, here is the first song on the album, Concrete Jungle. So here we go. All right, and ending side one with Baby, We've Got a Date, in brackets, Rocket Baby. Yeah, I mean, this is a really great album. It is kind of not obvious, but it is sort of, I can tell that it's his first album, his debut album, because it is, he's still not quite as developed in his singing and still sort of figuring that out. But the Wailers actually did exist before Bob Marley joined. They were a band for 10 years before they got together with Bob Marley in Jamaica. So this is his first album with them, or their first album together. But, and it's the first album that really brought reggae to sort of a wide audience. But so far, it's pretty great, you know.
Yeah, it is a good album. I think it started off really strong, and the guitar solo in the first track was pretty good, not bad. I don't know who plays lead.
So that actually wasn't one of the Wailers.
Okay.
So the producer, Chris Blackwell, he wanted to add some more rock elements.
Yeah.
To the music to sort of bring it into sort of a more of a mainstream, so to basically to get it played on radio. And so that was a guy by the name of Wayne Perkins.
Well, it was really good anyway. I thought it was, you know, I love the tone of it. I love the, just the composition of it. I thought it was actually a really good solo and it fit really, really well in the song.
It really did. Yeah, it was very tastefully done. It didn't feel like here's this rock guy trying to
squeeze something in that didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it was very tastefully done. It was like it, and so it says something like that guitar player, Wayne Perkins, he had never heard of reggae before, never played reggae, but he just sort of, I guess, and that's sort of the mark of a good session player is, you know, you just sort of, you've got a job to do and you got to sort of figure it out. But he did a great job in figuring out what to do in this sort of style of music that he wasn't familiar with.
Yeah.
His writing on this is he had, by this point he was already pretty well known in Jamaica, but I don't think he was quite as a political writer as much as he would become later on. Although there is definitely
there's quite a bit of 400 years and concrete jungle and slave driver are definitely very political. I'm sure there's going to be more on side.
There's probably, yeah. He's a great, you know, that's the thing about Bob Marley is I often find people they do pay attention to his lyrics and they do recognize him, but he's, I don't know. I feel like his message is often buried in where people don't pay attention to what he's actually singing about as much as they really should. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But I feel like people sort of listen to his music and the music can be very relaxing and laid back, and it is, and a lot of his songs are that, but a lot of his songs are very politically charged and specific to Jamaica. It's like, this is what's going on in Jamaica, especially in the 70s, where there was a lot of corruption in the government in Jamaica, and he was singing about, like, this is what's going on, this is what they're doing. And I feel like when he sort of broke through in America, a lot of white audiences didn't quite understand or didn't pay attention to what he was actually saying and saying, this is what's going on in my country. And they almost, not that they didn't care, but they were almost like unaware of what he was singing about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, there's a certain disconnect when there's like an ocean or even a a strait in between, countries and whatnot. And it's hard to pay attention to what's going on in another country when, you know, there's a lot of crap going on in your own. And, you know, the 70s weren't exactly the most, there was a lot of crap going on in the U.S. as well. And
yeah,
you had
Nixon happening in the Vietnam War and stuff. Yeah,
and even in Canada, we had what was it, the FLQ crisis
going on.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah. So sometimes, yeah, I think in that way, the message can be lost in the middle of a lot of people don't pay attention to lyrics anyway, but Bob Marley was a man who tried to live by his convictions, and he had a lot to say, and it does come across when you actually listen to what he has to say. It's not necessarily a party down.
Yeah, that's the perfect way of putting it. And you know, it's I don't know, and I think I talked about this in the other Bob Marley album that we did, but I don't know how, and I don't know why reggae music is so different than any other type of music. In terms of the rhythm that reggae has, every other form of sort of Western music, from like jazz to blues to rock to like everything from like the 20th century, let's say, is everything that's in 4/4 has a certain beat, which is 1 and 3 on the kick drum and 2 and 4 on the snare.
Yeah.
And reggae
reverses that.
Doesn't reverse that. It's everything comes down on 3. It's 1, 2, 3.
Yeah,
four,
yeah, you're right.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. And it creates this open space. And I don't know how they came up with that. I don't know if they decided they were going to do something different, or like, I don't know how or why that happened, but it works so well.
Well, it's that open space that sort of gives that relaxing feel. And even when the song is upbeat and sort of fast, it has that airiness to it, and it just has a light feel to it. It's very joyous, even when the, well, like we were saying, the, you know, the message is actually kind of
yeah, yeah, that's right. It's there's a certain like rhythm to the guitars and the bass line, like there's just, and the keyboard is doing these like little stabs, and that's really what's driving the rhythm. The drums are almost like just the accent. And yeah, it's so different than any other form of like 20th century music. I think ska was sort of where reggae evolved from. And I think that's sort of where that rhythm kind of started. But I don't know the origin of that. I don't know why. And I'm so curious to find out like why they decided, like,
why does reggae?
Well, exactly. Like you can hear the influence, like if going through the 20th century on every sort of form of music, you can hear the influence, but reggae is sort of like, it's its own thing. And I'm not saying it's in a bubble or anything, but it doesn't sound like anything else. Like I can't pinpoint where it sort of came from. And I don't know, they must have heard like other music before, but I don't know.
It's an odd rhythm to suddenly just sort of spring out of somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a little bit elusive, but yeah, obviously it came out of, I think ska again got lots of influence from like, you know, jazz and rock and pop and stuff like that, and then reggae sort of definitely came out of the ska sort of sound, and I guess somewhere in the ska creation, this reggae rhythm sort of just came about, and it'd be interesting to sort of follow we need more like early ska to sort of appear on this list or something like that, I think is what we really need.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, honestly, if there's any, I'm sure somebody out there knows. So if anybody out there is listening to this and knows like the history of, or like the origin of that sort of sound, please, you know, contact us. because I'm sure, you know, someone, there's like an expert in Jamaican music that knows, like, oh yeah, this, so if you, or you know, anyone who knows, we would love to hear from you. Cause I'm very curious about that. But other than that, I mean, I know like this is great music, and the Wailers are like, they, like I said, they were around for like 10 years before, this album came out. And so they're already a tight unit when, Bob Marley comes along and uses them as his backup band. And, yeah, this, the album, it wasn't initially a big hit in America, but it caught on fairly quickly. And, but it was,
it's one of those cult classics that sort of introduced the genre, and being a new genre, of course it wasn't going to be like the best, or I mean the biggest thing in the world hitting off. It takes a little bit of time for that to catch on, but it made a splash in certain circles anyway.
It absolutely did. Yeah. You know, and it did, like, it got reviewed there were a lot of, like, it was mostly like positive reviews from out of the gate. It says the critical reception of To Catch a Fire was positive. Village Voice critic Robert Crisco says, half these songs are worthy of St. John the Divine, and Barrett Brothers bass and drums save those that aren't from Limbo. Reviewers from Rolling Stone also praised the brothers' playing, concluding that Catch a Fire is a blazing debut. According to the review, Concrete Jungle and Slave Driver crackle with streetwise immediacy, while Kinky Reggae and Stir It Up revel in the music's vast capacity for good time skanking. Stop That Train and 400 Years, both written by Peter Tosh, indicate the original Wailers weren't strictly a one-man show. That's important too. And like I said, they were a great band to begin with. And yes, Peter Tosh is
the other big reggae.
The other big reggae. Exactly. Yes. If anyone knows another reggae artist, it's Peter Tosh. Yeah. And he worked very closely with Bob Marley and was a member of the Wailers before he joined, but he's a great writer as well. And, you know, sort of, he had a great solo career as well. And so I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So it says To Catch a Fire was the first Bob Marley and the Wailers album released outside of Jamaica, marking their transition from a local act to an international phenomenon under Island Records. This is kind of cool. And it's unfortunate that they couldn't keep up with this. It had a unique album cover. The original vinyl release featured a Zippo lighter-shaped album cover that opened like a real lighter. But due to high production costs, later the pressing switched to a standard sleeve featuring a photo of Bob Marley smoking a joint. But it is, if you, I think I can show.
I think I've seen pictures of the original.
Yeah. It is really cool. And it opened the top opened, and that's how you took the record out. But, as the album became popular and they needed to make more copies, it became too expensive to,
especially for a small label like Island.
Yeah, exactly.
At the time.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of great ideas, but yeah, you just got to not always have the dough to back it up. So it's a neat collector's item out there though. So,
it has a rock influence. Producer Chris Blackwell added rock-oriented overdubs, including lead guitar solos by Wayne Perkins, a white American session guitarist who had never played reggae before but contributed to songs like Concrete Jungle, which we talked about before. Political themes. Many tracks, such as Slave Driver and 400 Years, reflect Marley's and the Wailers' deep-rooted concerns about colonialism, oppression, and Black liberation. Which, you know, those are themes that would continue, that Bob Marley would continue to write about, especially on the album that we did before Exodus. This was a breakthrough for reggae. While the album wasn't a huge commercial hit at first, it helped establish reggae as a global genre, paving the way for Marley's later superstardom and reggae's expansion beyond Jamaica. And that's the sort of the ska punk of the sort of late 70s, early 80s. It was because there was a large Jamaican community in England,
in London. In London.
That's sort of where it sort of caught on. And Jamaica or reggae, this is really the first time anybody outside of Jamaica had heard reggae. And you know, after that, it just sort of exploded. And it's weird that this small country in the Caribbean had such a huge influence on music. And like globally, people love reggae, you know.
I guess it takes a visionary to sort of do that. And Bob Marley was definitely that guy. But yeah, even so, it's quite the accomplishment for, because I can't think of too many other, like, you know, small countries, be them islands or not, that have the same kind of, maybe Great Britain, if you consider that a small island, but again, it sort of took blues and rock and roll and molded it into something else and sort of sold it back to the country that it came from and elsewhere. But yeah, to have something that just sort of originates in the small island country and have it take on such a huge, you know, cultural impact is a bit unusual. It's a bit of an anomaly that way. I'd love to see something else like that happen again.
It would be very cool, yeah.
Well, you know, there's like Korean pop and stuff like that that's kind of doing that. And Japan did a little bit of that as well. But again, it's hard to say if that's like uniquely...
Exactly. It's
Jamaican or Korean, or I mean... Japanese or Korean, in the same way that reggae was so uniquely Jamaican.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's the
thing. Hard to say.
Like with the Korean pop and whatever, it's like you can hear the influence
of Western music on it.
Exactly.
And there was an influence of Western music on Jamaican music. However,
they took it and sort of made something very, very unique.
It seems a little different somehow, and it's hard to really pinpoint exactly what it is, but it's got to be that reggae beat that's just so unique. I mean, how many different things can you do with four timing and still come out with something brand new like Jamaica did? I mean, There's a bit you can do with it, but they managed to do something completely new and ran with it. Maybe that's why you haven't heard anybody else do it, because when they try to do it, it sounds wrong, or it just sounds like reggae or something else that came before. And they're like, oh, this is hard coming up with something new. Unless they pick a completely different time signature or something like that, like put it on Pink Floyd's Money. And try to like do a 7/4 timing that sounds just as good as that. Yeah.
Do something unique with 7/4 that hasn't been.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or even 6/4. I mean, lots of blues and was in 6/4 and stuff like that. Lots of jazz. jazz really plays around with time signatures. They're doing new things all the time. I mean, that's just kind of what jazz is. And they'll throw anything at the wall and make it sticks. Not everything is like the most pleasant thing to listen to.
Exactly.
But they're trying, and a lot of stuff is good to listen to. So
exactly. They're going for it. Yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll get back into the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at The Worst Podcast on Mars. So check those guys out.
I'm Amanda, and that's Evan. Say hi, Evan.
Hi, Evan.
And we're the hosts of The Worst Podcast on Mars. This is the podcast that talks music. And on Fridays, we work our way through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's list of 200 definitive albums. I do a bunch of research trying to figure out why it's on this list. And on Tuesdays, we do smaller episodes that are not part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's list. And Evan, well, he just literally shows up. So if that's what you're into, please find us on Apple Music or Spotify.
But not Mars. Yet.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right, and ending the album with Midnight Ravers. Yeah, this is a fantastic album. I don't know if there's a Bob Marley album that isn't great. I don't know. I don't know if that's because he died so young and he didn't get a chance to get... Is Jimi Hendrix so great because he died so young and he didn't, you know, but then, you know, you think about, like, I know, the Rolling Stones, who have had such a long career, and even their bad albums are still pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. And some people give them a lot of flack for their so-called bad albums, but honestly, they're pretty good. Even when they stepped out of the rock and roll genre, or sometimes they would do like a disco or something like that, they did it well. Yeah, I know what you mean. Bob Marley really was only on the scene for just a little under 10 years, at least in the North American scene or something like that. I think he was a little over 10 years in the Jamaican scene.
Yeah, this came out in 73 and he died in 81. So that's what, 8 years? So that's not a long time. But he put out a lot of albums in those years. But yeah, no, I don't think he really has done anything that's been bad. He was a very prolific songwriter, and you know, I think he had a lot to say. Obviously some of the songs are on this one are more personal, but you know, I think his political stuff and he just had so much he needed to get out there. I don't think that he really had time to think about whether it's going to be good or bad. He just had to get his message out there, and it turned out like he had an amazing band helping him do that along the way.
Yeah. And honestly, that's sort of like the best approach. Like, the more you sort of worry about whether or not it's good or bad, I mean, sometimes that's when you sort of falter. If you don't worry too much about that, you just put out stuff. I don't have the greatest time following my own advice here, but sometimes I think that's your best advice, is to just not worry about it. Just put out stuff, and you know, if it's good, it'll catch on. And even if it's not, I mean, you're starting, you're doing it, you're putting it out there, and sometimes you gotta suck before you're good.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I don't think he, well, maybe it's just we didn't hear when he sucked.
It's true. I don't, there might be some home recordings that he absolutely hated or something like that, and we've never heard, never hit the light of day or something like that. But yeah, he, for the most part, he just, you know, he had something to say and he said it. So
Yeah, and I really enjoyed this album. I knew a few songs from it. I think I knew Stir It Up, Stir It Up, and Kinky Reggae, and Concrete Jungle. But I really enjoyed the whole thing, and I can't really say. I can't say that there's really a song that I don't like on here. So what would be your pick for your three favorite songs?
Well, oddly enough, the two big hits off of it, Concrete Jungle and Stir It Up, they're two of them, because I just think those songs are just, they're great. They picked up in a lot of, like, they were just imaginative. And I know some of the stuff was like dubbed in later and stuff like that, but it worked so well that it just works. And they laid the groundwork for, like, some of my favorite musicians came along later, like Big Sugar and David Lindley and stuff like that. So, but my third favorite probably has to be, I might go with Midnight Ravers. That was a good one too.
I would probably go with, I'd probably go with Stir It Up, Kinky Reggae, and Midnight Ravers too. I think those would be my picks. So yeah, so would, like, I think I know, but like, would you listen to this album again?
Oh yeah, I'd listen to this again. I think I like this one better than the other one even. So
yeah, I think so too. I think I do too. Yeah, this one is a little more. But I'd have to go back and listen to the other one again, but.
Yeah, and I would.
Probably would. Yeah, I think this one, there's that freshness of there's something I like about debut albums where it's like you can feel the sort of the band isn't quite fully formed yet, and it's there's that freshness to them, and I think this album definitely has that.
Maybe not so much the Wailers weren't, you know, well seasoned.
Not exactly the Wailers, but like this, the collaboration.
Collaboration with Bob Marley. Yeah, absolutely. It was a very fresh collaboration, and it was definitely worth their time.
Yeah, I would absolutely listen to this again. But yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you did enjoy the show, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And we'd love it if you would leave a rating and review, and as it really helps new listeners find us. And if you want to support the show and get some exclusive content, like you get a shout out during these episodes, and you get the episodes a day before they go live, and you can even pick an album for us to review, you can do that by going to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can also check out the website. You go to polyphonicpress.com. You can listen to all the previous episodes that we've done over there, and lots of updates and everything like that. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boy.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.